welcome to The Horrible Show, the editorial video game podcast from HorribleNight.com. I'm your host, Justin Lacey. It is Tuesday, October 23rd, 2012, coming at you live on Twitch.tv/HorribleNight every Tuesday night. And joining me this evening, Ethan Moses.
Hey.
What's up, Ethan?
Oh, I'm just happy. Like, it's just a happy day. I'm glad to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Tell the people why you bought a yellow tuxedo t-shirt.
Actually, I was given this as a gift, a noble gift from my noble younger brother for his noble wedding. It's a best man shirt. Wait, let me turn around so you can see.
It does. I can confirm it says best man.
Best man. At least at that day, I was.
What did the other groomsmen get?
Best of man.
Anything? Same shirt, but it didn't have best man on the back of it. Mine was different, and I think it's in Jurassic Park letters too, but I can't confirm.
Yeah, I saw that. It was.
Yeah.
Confirmed.
It's the voice of Josh Lee, who's across town from me tonight because he's apparently contagious with whatever has knocked him out for the past year or week.
I'm living in a bubble right now, and no one is allowed in. I'm surprised they didn't cut the internet in here and the air conditioning. I've got something. I don't know if it's SARS or AIDS 2, you know, like, I don't know, but it's been bad and I've still got it. And, I'm not coughing right now uncontrollably, which is great. And I hope it stays that way. But if it gets bad, I've got some, fresh cherry lozenges on standby. Lozenge.
Yeah. We're trying to figure out if I should come up and record in studio or not. And cause you said you're feeling better. You're on the rebound a bit.
I am on the mound. Yeah.
And you started thinking whether or not you're actually safe to be around other people, and turns out no.
No. You know, I actually tried to look this up online. I'm like, at what point during like a cold or the flu or whatever the hell I've got, are you no longer contagious? And like, nobody knows.
The internet doesn't know. Yahoo Answers doesn't have a definitive.
No, well, there's
Yahoo Answer.
Well, there's people that say like, you know, oh, it's a, you know, it's 5 days after initial symptom, and then it's like, but that's like bullshit. And then people are going like, what? And that's not true at all. Like, you could stay in your system for longer than that. You know, it's all bullshit. Nobody actually knows.
Were there small monkeys involved?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my god! Because your lady friend works at the zoo.
Yeah.
Fuck! Outbreak like a mother.
But
I was gonna say, have you had any contact with Cillian Murphy?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah, like I had to think about it. Like, yeah, I see him sometimes.
Yes, all the time.
And I was hanging out with Dustin Hoffman the other day. Actually, we were joking about this.
Yeah. This is scary.
Oh, do your
stuff.
Dustin Hoffman. You do a great Dustin Hoffman.
I've never done a Dustin Hoffman before. I don't even remember what he sounds like.
I pulled a Dustin Hoffman at a bar once.
Did you really?
I was just doing a Captain Hook impression.
Uh-oh.
Which always devolves into more of the run home Jack chant. Yeah, it's a little... Maybe that's not a true Dustin Hoffman. That's whatever that child actor's name is that I don't know anymore.
Oh, yeah, what happened to him?
I don't know.
Who was that?
Whatever Josh has.
Yeah, I was going
to say. The kid at Hook. I have no idea what that kid's name is.
I know, but I don't remember what he looks like.
Yeah,
was it Jonathan Brandis?
No, it was not Jonathan Brandis.
He died.
No, he was CG. Wasn't he CG? He was CG in that movie.
Fans of Super Gaming Best Friends may have noticed that we had two Jonathan Brandis references 2 weeks in a row now.
Oh, wow. I wasn't even on that show.
Rest in peace.
No, but I heard the host was great.
Last week?
Yeah, on Super Gaming Best Friends.
Yeah, I was on that show.
It's a good time.
I wasn't the host, though.
Yeah, so that's every other Tuesday. Mm-hmm. But we're gathered tonight to get into the holiday mood and discuss horror games tonight. More specifically, what exactly is wrong with mainstream horror games since the indie games have kind of stolen the scene a bit and... the mainstream horror games have kind of fallen on their faces. So we're going to talk through all angles of that, but before that happens, we're going to start things off like we always do with game industry shout-outs. Josh, what has had your attention
Okay. Maybe we talked about this a year ago. Excuse me. I don't remember, though. There was an album that came out. I missed it at the time. I just discovered this. The greatest video game music composer was Andrew Skeet, and it's performed by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And it's just it's like 20 tracks of video game music performed by the LPO, and it is insane. Like, I just saw this in the news because there's a sequel or another album they're doing that's coming out very soon here, and I think it comes out maybe Friday or something. I see this and I go, how the hell did I miss this? Because on this first album, there are like, it's got like the Uncharted theme. It's got like Metal Gear. You've got like some Halo, Mass Effect music's on there. And it's got some like Zelda and Mario and stuff too, but Dead Space, all kinds of like, there's some like really, really good tracks on there. And we hear remixes of game music all the time. Justin, you and I like will listen to them together sometimes.
And probably to an unhealthy degree, actually.
Right, right. Hmm. Everything from chiptunes to metal to, you know, whatever. Somebody playing a harpsichord on YouTube or something. But this is not the same. This is different.
Acapella. And
this isn't even like video games live, like that, those concerts and stuff. That was cool. And Eminence Orchestra and stuff, they're cool. But trust me, this is totally different. I mean, like, I think people could, some of these tracks, but I guess they would call them arrangements or whatever. I don't know. I'm not.
I'd call them jams.
Some of these jams.
Yeah.
You could probably listen to if you don't even know, like, or enjoy video game music. Because it's really, really well done. And, I was cranking it up last night, and it was, that first album. I went and got it. It was like $8 on Amazon. For that first album, it's going to be $8 for the second one too. That's DRM free on Amazon, by the way. You get on iTunes as well if you have to have everything in the Apple ecosystem. But anyways, yeah. So this second album has got Far Horizon from Skyrim, which is like one of my favorite tracks off that soundtrack. You got a Mass Effect 3 track. They have One Winged Angel, which not my favorite, but that's a fan favorite there. More Halo, Chrono Trigger. There's a Super Metroid medley. They've got the Diablo 3 overtures in there. The Arkham City main theme, which is really good. That was one of my favorite main tracks recently. And Deus Ex, Fez, Portal. I mean, it's a pretty awesome list here of stuff. They even have something from Assassin's Creed in there. So, really, really, really good stuff. I may be just way behind the times here, and you guys may all just go, oh yeah, I've listened to that. I've got that album. But if you don't, you got to check it out. It's amazing.
I checked out the first one. So, it's kind of weird though. I think I prefer chiptunes over the, the orchestral arrangement or the orchestral jam. But it is, I gotta hand it to them as far as the assortment that they've chosen. They've got a good variety in there. So,
but the performances are unbelievable.
Yeah, awesome.
Just
yeah. And it's, I think I got it confused too with the video game live, the video games live soundtracks.
Yeah.
But this has I don't know. There's something better about this to me.
Well, there's something different about like listening to the ISO perform it and the London Philharmonic, you know,
yeah.
It's just, that's, you know, they're fantastic. And, and that, I don't know, you know, exactly what goes into that composing or arranging or whatever that Andrew Skeet did, but
drugs,
he did a good job.
Oh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And they have on their website, they've got some, like behind the scenes videos of it coming together and stuff and just seeing them all like practicing and all that kind of stuff, mixing it and all that stuff was pretty cool. That little behind the scenes thing on the Super Metroid medley thing, and just hearing like just a little bit of that was woo. tickle me in there.
November 6th, it looks like, for the second one.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Cool times.
He confirmed that. Yes.
Yeah. That's correct. Great. Yeah, that's correct.
That sounds like a good date. What?
He was trying to spread germs while answering.
I better not get those to the internet. That sounds like the movie Virus.
I mean, this is a pretty personal podcast, so hope all the audience came prepared with their rain gear.
All the dick in the dick in the dirt stuff was on the pre-show. I think we're fine.
Wouldn't help.
Ethan, what's your game history shout out?
We've actually the Medal of Honor Warfighter is kind of got one of our awards last year for like dumbest name possible, but it's actually going to win another award this year for the most incredibly long list of day one patch issues. Information that I've ever fucking seen in my life. It is, I'm very accepting of the need to patch games immediately, but it's embarrassing. And if anybody had any doubts about this game before this, they just don't buy it. I mean, it's literally like patch note number one fixes the game to make it play well. Patch number two enables people to actually play multiplayer without getting pissed. Like, it's like insane. Like, it's like 3 pages long. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, and I thought it was, when I first saw the news, I read it as, oh, first, like, day one patch. It, like, oh, they're good. They're like, they're so excited about their game, they're adding new cool shit in. No, that's not what they're doing. They're fixing the game, like, literally polishing it to a level that, it's nuts. Like, this is probably one of the bigger releases to have this happen since maybe Fallout New Vegas, I want to say.
This is what happens when a publisher won't budge on a release date.
I mean, I was going to say, I would be careful to frame it in not necessarily calling out the developers. I mean, I feel for any developer that's working on the Medal of Honor franchise at this point. And and it's just kind of been EA's entire approach with every bit of news around this game has been weird. And I'm just...
Everyone knows the developer. I mean, in my mind, the developer in a lot of these situations, especially if you're developing a game for EA, you're kind of off the hook. I understand. Trust me. I don't put that past it. But still, this is embarrassing. And there are people out there, very few of them, that aren't going to be able to download this. Like, there are people that probably bought this game and aren't going to be able to have access to a working game. I mean, it's one thing to fix some of these multiplayer, you know, hubbubs, but it's something altogether different when the single player campaign has some struggles. And I mean, again, this list is incredible. Like, this isn't even like cool, fun things. Like, added new weapons and added new, you know, camo gear. It's like, oh, now it works. Like, it's not going to work when you get it, you know, but it's going to work once you get this patch. I mean, it's kind of nutty. So yeah, I feel this is going to be a big embarrassing game. I just have a feeling. I don't know. We kind of called that last year, though. I think. You know, like, I think that it was between Call of Duty, Black Ops 2, which I think we've all kind of come around to say, you know, there's actually some aspects of it that are pretty cool. So Call of Duty is like kind of off my list completely, especially the new zombie type thing announced. But this is like, holy shit! So not only do you have a stupid name, but you have a stupid long list of just patch information. And I don't know. I'll be curious to see who buys this. Are you guys going to buy this game?
I want to know the audience that's excited for this. Like, I want to, like, who really is that core target audience? Is it somebody that just literally, you know, they love military shooters, but they just really hate Call of Duty? Like, or is it like the bleed over, I can't get enough military shooters, so I'll play any of them?
Yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, like, I don't mind military shooters. Like, don't get me wrong. I have, you know, the last Medal of Honor was, you know, like, it wasn't even, like, I suffered through the Battlefield 3 campaign, you know what I mean? And the last Medal of Honor was, like, not good. Like, it was bad. It was just real bad. I mean, it was trying to be a halfway point between Call of Duty and Battlefield, which it just doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Like, I don't even know. Like, Medal of Honor doesn't even matter anymore. And I think this has to kill it. Like, it should. Like, we don't need it. Like, we don't need another. We've got Battlefield. We've got Call of Duty. We're good.
Well, we don't.
We're good to go on the military.
You know, if Medal of Honor was like, you know, still making the World War II shooters or something, like, you know, doing something different, just anything different. But this franchise, its revival was just an excuse to try to get those, you know, the years in between Battlefield games try to have a military shooter out there to just to cash in. It's like, this isn't like, this isn't some deep creative vision here of like, you know,
when they concepted this one, they kind of had their fingers crossed that maybe Respawn was going to be running ahead of schedule and maybe they would fill in this gap. I know they're next gen, but whatever. I'm trying to find some something to grasp onto.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. The last one was received as like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to buy it. Just just okay. Just, you know, modern shooter.
Perspective. Like, I got the last Medal of Honor maybe 3 months after it was released for $4.99. $4.99.
How was it as a $5 game?
Oh, I mean, you can't go wrong with a $5 game. Like, I'm not going to be too judgmental on that. Like, to pay full price, I would have it would have been a horrible thing to do. You know, I remember, you know, playing the multiplayer beta and doing an article on it, being kind of like, oh, you know, this is kind of, it's in between Battlefield and Call of Duty, which is something nobody wants. Like, you either want really tight, really fast gameplay, or you want a giant map and a bunch of shit going on.
Right.
Like, that mid-ground, I don't know who wants that. Like, maybe my grandma would. Like, maybe my grandma would be more comfortable with something like that, but she doesn't even like games, you know? She likes Cutty Sark, and that's all.
Moving on to my shout-out actually goes to the Halo 4 trailer that was released last week that David Fincher actually worked on. It was another live-action trailer. I think I was completely unmoved by this trailer. It was cool, but, you know, I'm jaded when it comes to trailers, so whatever. But what caught me off guard was leading up to this, there was a lot of stories about whether 343 Studios was going to reveal the face of Master Chief, and they went on, they declared no, that we're not looking to do that. And then Chief's face is like all over this trailer, and it didn't get much, like, it didn't come with any fanfare or like derision, but it was just very, very odd that they chose to reveal it in this fashion, but they're also not like standing by it as canon. But that's what stuck out to me about the trailer. Like, okay, they kind of showed Chief's face.
Well, they showed there's one thing they can't go back on now, which everyone's going to be super shitty about, and that is the Chief's not black. Everyone was expecting that, like, you know, Master Chief, you know, he's black. And then he's not. And I'm like, what is this? He's not, you know, it's like, oh, he's like the everyman of the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like,
we're all one race at that point.
It's right, all... right, right. It's like, he was
I
like
feel
a
that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just, I don't know. I thought it was a cop out.
Well, see, I thought he was going to be like a big lizard, like a Dilophosaurus or something like that. Like something weird. Like something to throw you off. Be like, really? That's who we're so excited about? Like, that's what I was. Or he didn't have a face at all. Like, maybe it opened up and there was a tiny little alien in it, like from Men in Black. That's what I was hoping for. Like something fucking crazy. Like, I don't like Halo, but I would love for his face to be something fucking weird, you know? Or like, maybe it's an old lady. Like a really old lady's Master Chief. The whole fucking time it was this very old lady.
It's the poker dog. Like, that would have been even better. See, like a little bow tie on or something. I don't know. I always wanted I wanted to see the Chief, like his face, but I didn't. But it has to be, if it's revealed in a game, I just don't think they'll ever do it. The only reason that they would ever put the Chief in these trailers is if they're just like, well, I guess you can make him look generic, whatever, because we're never going to show him in the fucking game. Because it's not going to be a big deal. Like, if it was, wouldn't it be like, you know, when he's like old or something and it's just like the last thing he does? It'd be like a Darth Vader moment. So when he finally pulls it off, he's going to just look like, you know, fucking Mitt Romney or whatever. You're just like, oh, hey, look, he's just kind of this old dude now.
Yeah. Well, what's he look like? I didn't see that. What does he look like?
He's just a generic.
Like John Stamos?
He's super like. Yeah. John Stamos with like, you know, Randy Orton's body.
Oh shit!
It's Randy Orton Stamos.
Perfect man.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I mean, no, he was great. It was just like it just might as well just been Channing Tatum. You know, it was just generic generic guy. Like, oh, he's a guy.
I heard he's hot right now.
My first Commander Shepard was not the default Shepard. It was the one who looked like Master Chief. And that's what I thought of when I saw it. I was like, oh, it's my original Shepard.
Well, you know what? It doesn't really matter what he looks like, because no one's ever going to get close enough to feel his warm breath on their face, you know, in the morning.
Cortana
will. Autumn morning.
Cortana's found other ways.
Yeah, she's our. Oh, she just slips into his little.
I mean,
we don't need to go into details on that.
Urethra?
Artificial intelligence, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Okay. Urethra. Like one of those Amazon fish, you know, that like lays their eggs in your testicles, aka the scariest fish on the planet outside the Great White. Oh, yeah.
Those are real. You're not making that up.
No, I'm not making them. No.
I saw it on the telly.
Dickfish, I believe.
Yeah, dickfish. Yeah.
I'm not National Geographic. I'm just a man.
Cock salmon. Because they swim upstream. I don't know. Yeah. Well, sorry, Justin. Your show is ruined.
I was going to say, if you had like the 22 minute mark for our mention of dickfish, you've won your company's pool.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
You might need them if condoms get outlawed. I don't know.
They'll be like the new leeches. You know, they'll suck out on you the badness. You're
sick. They can cure you. Get the iron out of your blood. Sorry.
Better than sticking leeches down my.
Yep. Horrible shout out time. Take a look at the original material on horriblenight.com. Josh, what had your attention?
Ethan's dickfish reference tonight. Oh. I'm going to give a shout out to Ethan for that. Actually, no, I am going to ride the Ethan Nutt train here.
It's a good train. It's a high-speed train. Very small.
I read some... There was some cool stuff on the site, but it's like everything that we've put out in the past year just pales in comparison to the Rotabulous Moments in Gaming number 2. The second video in the series is one of the finest pieces of YouTube cinema I've ever... personally seen, and this one involves XCOM, and it hit like really, really close to home. I spend so many games of that, and I didn't get to talk about XCOM and Super Game Best Friends last week, and I just got all this stuff pent up inside of me, and one of the main things is like I'm playing it like I'm doing it wrong. And I know that, and I'm playing it like I'm like an asshole. I'm just saving a lot, and if something goes wrong, I'm like, I'm not fucking losing. There are people I don't mind losing, but there are like some dudes I'm like, nope, I will not fucking lose them. Reload, because it's always bullshit when they die, because my tactics are fucking perfect, and the game fucks me. And I'm like, my bros are not going down because of some bullshit. And then, but so constantly, the researchers are just always telling you, like, you know, well, we got to capture some shit alive. We got to get those resources, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm out there, like, kicking everything's ass, and I get back, and then all these places are going, like, oh, we're panicking Japan, and oh, shit, Australia left the fucking alliance, and all this shit. We need some more alien bodies and stuff. We need to capture them alive. I'm like, I just fucking, like, saved, like, 1,000 people. And you know, like, everyone's just been, like, since Mother, why can't we just have more teams at once going out, you know? So, you never get to just blow shit up, and Ethan's video shows you it gave me that moment of relief that I will never be able to get in my own game, because I have, you know, I've built these constraints around my gameplay style just to, so I don't lose, and it's wonderful.
I have a different experience every time Ethan submits one of his videos, just because you just kind of let him do his own thing, and I'm never quite sure what he's going to come back with. And I love having moments where he, like, where, well, this is what I would have done, because he's, like, building this epic moment, and you hit on two things. Yeah, that entire moment of, yes, I just never blow everything up, and that's what I would do if there were, you know, if I was, you know, well-trained militarily and aliens invaded, I would blow them up. You just got to survive. And so, yeah, definitely got some of my frustrations with that game out. And then your Independence Day reference was also right at the right moment. And I knew it was coming, and it didn't disappoint.
Well, once you start playing that game on classic difficulty with Iron Man mode on, you start blowing the fuck out of everything. Like, you don't worry about the fucking scientists anymore at that point. So, like, I started to make that video before that, and then, like, I beat the game this weekend, so I got, you know, the classic difficulty, and it's like, you're blowing buildings up to, like, break the aliens' cover, like, doing all this stuff that you would never do before, because you need to have, like, pretty solid troops in place, and even then... All of them die. They just die. They just all of them die, and it's fucking sad, and I just wanted to have a moment with, you know.
Does the scientist ever shut up when that happens?
No. It's so funny. Like, they'll bitch and complain to you about, like, oh, will you please remind your men that you shouldn't blow up the aliens? But then, like, back and, like, my whole team died. Like, it was a great team. It was a bunch of veterans. I think, you know, I had a major and lieutenant. I mean, nobody was lower than a sergeant. All of them died, and the scientist was like, Did you get any aliens? Like, any live, like, aliens in that mission? Like, or did everyone just died? Okay, well, that's fine. Like, they don't even fucking care. They want live aliens.
Yeah, a bunch of assholes.
The whole game, I was expecting there to be a turn where, like, the scientists become bad. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why I was expecting that. Like, they get way too deep in the alien shit.
I think they need, like, a grizzled veteran that, like, has, you know, lost the use of some limbs or something, so he can't actually go out on in the field, but he cheers you on when you blow things up. You know, like, it's, you're just constantly being nagged in this game, and it's just like, what about the good stuff I'm doing? These guys are surviving, and
I killed like 300 aliens, and like, no one ever said anything about that, but I got like a live little fucking, like, I brought back like 20 live aliens. They're like, oh, this is good, but can you get one of the new ones? Like, there's a new one. Like, we got a bunch of those, and then you can't even sell the live ones. You just sell bodies. So you're like, send me mixed messages, your research team, but whatever. That's why you do what you fucking got to do. What? There was no Goldblum on that research team. That's what I'm saying. There was no Goldblum, and that's what we needed.
Smith and Goldblum. Every time I lose a guy, I start blowing things up. Like, if a man dies, I'm not going to be like, oh, you know, let's pussyfoot it. You know, I'm like, no, rocket launchers. I got two guys with rocket launchers and, like, three guys with grenades. Let's start blowing some shit up. I'm a Mr. Dave 3 right now. The third Mr. Dave.
I kind of feel like a cheater, but I do like the fact that I can rename my characters once, you know, my Mr. Daves die, that I can have another one.
Mr. Dave's nickname, the main Mr. Yeah. Dave that lived the longest, his nickname that the game gave him was Yeti. It's like, what? Fucking Yeti.
I stopped naming it after people I cared about because, like, my whole family died. Like, you know, I was like, this is horribly sad. That. Like, not only do I get too over-attached to video game characters, but, like, my family died, and, like, they look kind of like the people in my family. Well, I was like, oh, that's horrible.
Well, and eventually you run out of people that you know, your friends, and then you just feel bad because it's a shorter list than you thought. Because it'd be weird if you put an acquaintance on there, right? So you'd only you only name your guys after people that if they saw it would be like, ha 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 ha. If you just had to somebody who was like, there's somebody I know, a friend of a friend, I met him one time, like, and then, like, I made him as a character. I'd just be like, weird, because if they saw it, not that they would, but if they would be like, why the fuck about me? I don't even know you.
When you, like, get a new character and they make, like, for whatever reason, make him like your 10th support guy in a row. Then you, like, name him somebody you hate, and you just kind of send him out to scout the area and die.
I would never do that, regardless of... Wow, dude. I didn't realize you were an ex-com insensitive. every man had a place in my heart.
I do. As soon as I upped my squad size to 6, I got the upgrade early on, which was really good. I started putting a rookie in slot 6. And they would there was a guy who was like he was like this European guy. He was like Jens Harger, or I can't remember the guy's, damn it, I can't remember this fucking dude's name, but they named him like a brick or something like that, the nickname the game gave him. And this dude was just, I gave him like shotgun, and he just ran as far ahead as he could in turn one every single time, just reveal them all, because when that, you know, when the enemies get revealed, bullshit happens. It's your turn, and they get to move. I'm like, this is dumb.
Yeah, that's still the cheapest thing in the entire game, I think.
Well, it's because they didn't program them to have, like, actual turns. I mean, they actually just... That's a chance of spawning when that happens. So they did, it's not like they were in position. They actually didn't exist on the map yet. And I know this because if you fucking save and reload, every time you reload, they'll appear in different spots. Or they can.
Like that's good, though.
I tested it, and I was like, reload like five times in the same spot, and the aliens were in a different spot each time.
I'm okay with that, but still,
well, I'm okay with it for so you can't cheese it. But I don't think that's why they have that in there. I think it's in there because they don't have the. I think for resources, I don't think the aliens they don't have to keep track of the fucking things.
Yeah. Amateur. Never made a game before.
It's not Sim Aliens, though, you know? I mean, I don't think this has that Sid Meier touch to it. I love the game. It's great.
Yeah, Ethan, what's your horrible shout-out?
You know, I actually have to shout-out to Mr. Justin Gifford on his article, I don't want to rebel, which, very valid point. I mean, you're always the rebel. You're always, you know, you want something more. You want something more. And by the end of it, I was kind of like, you know, a lot of people that rebel are kind of sound like big whiny pussies. Like they you know, they're kind of like, oh, this isn't good enough, there's too much law abiding, and like by the end of it, like I was kind of like on you know, on pace with him. I was like, yeah, this makes sense, I'm a law abiding citizen, I don't want to rebel against anything, you know, like I wore like, you know, 3/4 length pants one time. I was like, wait a second, I gotta go back indoors, change, get them up past my knees, you know. So definitely loved that article. That was great. I love the anger that Justin Gifford always kind of writes with, even though I don't think it's intentional. I think it just sounds very angry. I feel like I would never want to be scolded by him. Like, I would never want to work for him.
Oh,
and then, like, 'cause if he calls you into his office, like, you're going to get your ass chewed. Like, it's not going to be fun. Not only is it not going to be fun, but he's like such an intelligent guy. You'll feel stupid and it'll be horrible. So, he scares me. I'm glad I'm friends with him, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say, is I'm glad I'm friends with him.
Yeah.
The other side of that that I like, since I've been playing, well, we've all been playing a lot of loot-filled adventures where you're just constantly trying to find an upgrade or the next piece to something to upgrade to something better. And when you think of all these rebels out in the world that just don't have the means, you know, it would be kind of nice to, like, you know, work for somebody in the game that could just provide you with that top weapon. Because here, you don't have to work for this. We have the resources. You can have this amazing weapon that you've always wanted, and you don't have to work for it. And you can just go do your job.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
30 hours you're going to spend looking for stuff? Nah, you know what? Come here. I got something. Let me give you this. It's going to be great. You're going to love it.
The Rebels in Star Wars had, like, all superior shit. I mean, besides, like, the large ships. Like, the X-Wings were way better than the fucking TIE Fighters. TIE Fighters, like, didn't have any fucking shields. They'd be like, oh, I'm firing, you know, my fucking four laser cannons at you.
I mean, what if...
They're like, oh, they're fast. They're nimble.
What if they
like,
used
those
death...
guys... What? Porkins couldn't...
Used
was shooting
Death Star
down,
for good.
You know, Empire... Whatever.
Star Wars.
Some of those planets needed to die, I'm just saying.
Oh, my God. Jimmy Smits died in that first blast. Just so you know.
But it's okay. Jimmy Smits is back in Sons of Anarchy. Which, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they call
Has
him really
he aged
awkward.
At all? Like, it doesn't seem like that guy ever gets older.
No. No.
What a good-looking guy.
Yeah, he's pretty... Mm-hmm.
Like Jimmy Smits.
I think we can all agree on that.
Yep.
My horrible shout-out goes to Ethan Moses. I don't know if you know him, but you wrote a... You know, you've been doing a lot of these, like, doing a lot of your humorous videos with some, you know, questionable language choices and setting a certain tone for some of your contributions lately. And then out of nowhere, you write a guide to greenlighting and getting greenlit on Steam Greenlight. And I just thought it was interesting on the aspect of trying to give some advice to gamers on, like, how to use Steam Greenlight to benefit themselves as gamers and to work together with these developers, like that we're trying to promote good games and good new developers. And sometimes, you know, when you thumbs down a game that isn't in a genre that you care about, or you thumbs down a game and leave a comment like it looks stupid, it's not really helping anyone. And I thought that was a good point.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I think I don't think many people get that yet. Like that's the kind of, you know, because I spend a lot of time on Greenlight, and you know, I try to give constructive criticism when I can or when I think it's valid. And a lot of people don't like. I think it's like us versus them mentality, which I think is always going to happen, regardless of whether it's indie or you know AAA, you know, developer, publisher, whatnot. And it's just like people aren't getting that. Like this is our platform to make great games. Like we have the power to go in there and say, look, we're not going to pay for this, so just, you know, go back to the drawing board or whatnot, or hear some good ideas, you know, and it's really, there's some combative type, stupid kind of childish shit on there, and on both sides of things. I mean, I think, you know, some of the developers, they aren't marketing towards a big publisher. They are marketing towards us. Like we have that power to say yay or nay to this, and so we're a different audience in terms of that. And I think that both sides can really learn from it. And I don't know. And that article was written in kind of, you know, happiness, you know, because I was happy. It wasn't a mean article, but by the end of it, I was kind of like, you know what? I'm kind of fucking pissed off about some of this shit because it's kind of like it's nuts, you know. So I'm hoping that, and as we know with the internet, everything kind of goes to hell eventually. So I'm hoping that maybe. Greenlight will, you know, maintain some sort of, you know, like, I don't know, like, class, I'm hoping, which it's not bad. Like, trust me, it's not as bad as some places, but
I think they should charge money
a little bit of stuff.
To comment. Hmm? I think you should have to pay to comment.
I think that
microtransaction.
Yeah, I think that's actually not
that will get rid of so many fucking trolls.
Yeah.
And then and moderators.
They did it for the troll entries, right, on the yeah, developer side.
This shit works.
Like, mm-hmm. I mean, if that's going to charity like those other ones, I'd pay to help make it a better system. Mm-hmm. Because I get better games out of it, and
just like, you know,
more constructive feedback. So.
Maybe you can just get into, and not necessarily like every time you type something, it's 10 cents a comment, but. Have some sort of system in place for, you know, the people who give the most constructive feedback. So maybe the people who put the projects up can like thumbs up a commenter for giving good feedback. And some of that would be, you know, just people that are going around, you know,
telling everybody their stuff is great. Do you want to get something to Verdi in chat for completely agreeing with you? Because he just said the same thing. Paid for constructive comments. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, just some way so that, and with the point of like some sort of rating system for the feedback, so that the people that give good feedback then jump to the top for the other projects they comment on. I mean, that's it. Because there are people like Ethan that will go and look at something and kind of analyze it however they can and throw their feedback in. And I mean, it's all about taking that, you know, it's all about an aggregate. Like you've got to take it all. You try to filter out the stuff that is, you know, it was garbage. But even when somebody says something and they make, you know, they speak in hyperbole or something, like, you can still pull something useful out of that. I mean, you know, this applies to anything. It's not just games industry thing. So, but, some of those projects will have so many comments. I'm like, how do you wade through all this stuff? You know, the good shit can get buried when the little flame war starts exploding and goes to the top. Yeah. And it's like, how in the hell is the guy supposed to find that? And I don't know what it looks like. If there's a different interface for the developers for there to see the comments, I mean, maybe, but I can't imagine it being like, so like that much easier to parse through it than us.
There was actually a game on there that it was getting really, and I won't mention it just because I don't, you know, it's not the best thing to do, but that somebody made a really valid comment, actually spent some time on some constructive criticism, and then someone came in and started, you know, throwing the slurs around, and then the other person who actually started out sounding very intelligent led into this big battle, and their comments were 20, it was 20 comments between these two people. And it's like, holy cow, like, that's ridiculous. That's not the place for this. It's not a forum. You know, this isn't 4chan. You know, this is actually, you know, it's almost like a focus group. You know, it's almost like a volunteer focus group at this point. I think most focus groups are somewhat volunteer, but...
it's an easily accessible comment box on the internet, and it's going to turn into a forum every single time, unless you put some sort of gate in front of it.
Yeah.
Or some sort of system just for incentives or whatever.
Yeah.
I think we have good ideas. Mm-hmm. I might be biased, but
hey, yes.
Gabe, you know where to find us, bro.
Yeah.
And Valve's been pretty progressive with that stuff, trying to integrate like ways to, you know, even within their games, trying to discourage, you know, people from breaking the game and or like ruining it for others. So would not be surprised for it to start showing up a little bit more in the community side of Steam. Let's take off on our main discussion for tonight. It is the season, and one of our, I'm sure, our favorite seasons. But I got to thinking with yet another, you know, say what you will about Resident Evil 6. It was a big release, and people take certain issues with where the franchise has gone. And, you know, I've been looking for a few horror games to play this season, and I started trying to think of what was the last mainstream horror game that I enjoyed from that pure horror level, and the name never popped up. So I thought I'd open up the question to our group here. We're all big horror game fans, and start to try to figure out, you know, at least right now, we've said on a few shows earlier that indie games have kind of taken over the or are bearing the flags for horror games lately, and maybe it is or it isn't possible for mainstreams to take it back. And so to kick this off, can you guys think of the last mainstream horror game that you really enjoyed? Or the closest, maybe?
Left 4 Dead.
Like, yeah, I think that's kind of a tough question, because I mean the last ones were before games became officially mainstream, and when people actually kind of, I don't know, took
a little bit more
effort into
more than, you know, the AAA, AA releases, like the major releases.
An actual scary game. I would almost say the like Silent horror Hill series.
And you don't have to necessarily be scared by a horror game.
Like scared, so like into the whole.
You know,
it's gonna be a complicated topic for Ethan.
Yeah, I mean, here's the way I look at it. I break it into so many different you know little categories here with horror, because horror is really difficult to define by one. Like, you know, Silent Hill, scary, whatever. You know, a game like
Left 4 Dead. That's a horror. That's horror.
Left 4 Dead is a horror game. Now, are you going for the horror elements, or are you going for the actual scares, the atmosphere, and that kind of stuff? So that's where you switch it up. So if you're going based on just the whole idea of the element, then I think probably Left 4 Dead was probably the last themed game that was actually well done and had a really good kind of pace to it, you know, that fit within what you would see in a movie or whatnot.
It was intense. It was frightening. Yep. I mean, it wasn't like a slow, methodical, supernatural jump scare thing. It was a like, oh my God, we have to get to. There's like no, the safety areas are few and far between. And it was just like,
It also does a good job of, I mean, Resident Evil gets bashed for turning into an action game, but Left 4 Dead kind of balances that line pretty damn well. Like, as far as, like, it's not, like you said, the creepy type of horror scares, but it's still, it's a dire situation that is pretty frightening in itself, and you're
completely tied to your teammates, too. I mean, that's the other thing. Well, you know, that's one, a lot of horror, like most horror situations, it's, you're alone. You know, or it's like a horror movie. It's like one, this is the main protagonist. Everyone else is going to die, but there's just like that one person. And like Left 4 Dead was just like the first time where it's like you're in it. You're in this, the thick of this bullshit with three other people. And you have to work together or you will fail as a group.
Well, I think here's the difference. With Left 4 Dead, I know it was, you know, it was a AAA, you know, game, but it felt more like that mid-tier type game. I'm not saying that in a derogatory way, just in terms of they didn't put a lot of production, stupid, senseless production into it. As soon as you start to introduce senseless production into anything, and we can look at the movie industry, and you'll see that you start to lose those elements. I think Left 4 Dead did a very good, solid experience without having to go over the top with, oh, let's have this big explosive story and let's have all these little, they didn't worry about that, because they knew that the pace, they knew that the atmosphere was enough, you know. And I think that's the big difference with all this stuff is, you know, in terms of the last big, you know, mainstream horror game that's come out, well, they haven't, because, you know, mainstream has given up on that, because as soon as your budget gets too high, you can't make a good horror movie and you can't make a good horror game. That's plain and simple.
I was actually kind of thinking that. I had some discussions this weekend about the Paranormal Activity franchise and how, you know, you look at the successes of Blair Witch, Paranormal Activity, and Saw, and just how those movies were so low budget that they were easy to reproduce, and that's why we were getting like half a dozen of them. And and I was like, I was immediately struck by, I hope we haven't hit that point with games where we are only going to get the lower budget titles that, granted, you know, hell, Ethan, you were playing Deep Sleep, which is a browser based kind of retro adventure game, you know, very like, you know, 16-bit style graphics. It still was able to pull off atmosphere, but at the same time, I do crave something just that will completely engross me with, you know, that new technology is capable of doing. You know, I like to play something high end, like on the Oculus Rift, and just get completely lost and scared shitless. And that's where the indie games may not be able to take me there. Mm-hmm. And I hit that moment. I was like, I hope games haven't hit that point, but they may have. Maybe it's just not. It's not going to be a profitable outcome for major publishers to get behind a horror game.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's clearly not. I mean, the thing is the mainstream audience thinks they want a horror game, but they don't, because they don't want the pace. They want in-your-face action. They want. And I'm not trying to speak in general tongues, but I mean, if people did not want that pace, then the Call of Duty series would not be doing as well as it did. I mean, that's plain and simple. You know, there are games that have kind of jumped over that hurdle, but those are few and far between. And so if you're a studio now, especially with how, you know, the economy is and how people are buying games, you're not going to take a chance on those things. And as soon as you get too much, and besides that, as soon as you have too big of a budget, you start to focus less on atmosphere, less on storytelling, less on what makes a horror movie or horror experience a horror experience, and you focus on all the things you can do to make it look cool. You know what I mean? I mean, look at the comparisons. And again, I'm always going to go back to the horror movie industry, because this is what happened. Is look at the movies like, you know, the Friday the 13th, you know, franchise back in the 70s and 80s, and that was a creepy franchise. Look at it now. It's special effects.
It was a profitable franchise. That's why they had. That's why it existed. You know, it was just trying to cash in on Halloween and stuff.
And what you saw is a progression, horror much like sells. A Resident Evil type progression, is that it started to get going from that campy, because you had to be campy, to that campy kind of, oh, let's put some more special effects and action into it. And then you lose that. And now it's not, you're not selling it on what made Friday the 13th frightening. You're selling it on, hey, it's Jason Voorhees. That's Freddy Krueger. They're fighting. That's awesome.
Yeah, but that stuff still sells.
Well, absolutely still sells, but I don't consider those movies. Those movies are a different genre of horror now, and I think that that's kind of where the Resident Evil series is going. Is it's almost like an action teeny bop type feeling. It's like you're not getting the same thing. You don't get an atmosphere from a Friday the 13th movie anymore like you used to. You know, like the first one was fucking holy shit. You don't get that.
But you also don't know what you're gonna get though. It's an interesting comparison, because horror sells. Just in general, like, people like to be scared, or they like the thrill. It's the moment of it's the build up, and then it's the, you know, it's the crescendo, and then it's like the boom. Even if you know it's coming, it's still thrilling, you know. And even if it's not the highest quality, like, people still watch, you know, shit like Ghost Ship and The Tall Man. You know, like, people still like that crap. You know, I spent like 8 hours one night. I stayed up to like 5 a.m. watching the fucking Marble Hornets series on the Slender Man stuff on YouTube. Like, like, people like horror. It will always sell, like, in the movies, but that's small budget shit. Like, those horror films are never big budget. Like, Paranormal Activity was like shoestring budget. That made so much fucking money. And the thing is, it doesn't need to be, it doesn't need to have those AAA sales. You know, it doesn't need to move, you know, 3 million units to be profitable or whatever, you know, like, so what I'm saying is basically the comparison between like the horror films and the indie horror games is very apt, because it's the same kind of thing where it's small budget. It doesn't take a lot to be profitable, you know, and sometimes maybe you get one that blows up or whatever at the movies. But I don't see horror games going away. Like, we see more and more of them popping up all the time out of the indie crowd. But I just think
honestly,
that,
that's what. Good.
Well, just in general, we've talked about this a lot recently. That those middle tier games that you know, where we think that the $30 or $40, you know, that price point is just like, that's just dead, you know, because a lot of times that was just based on, you know, price reduction from a $60 product because they didn't think it was going to sell. But, like that's that there needs to be a middle tier for horror games, I think, because you can get those small downloadable things. But yeah, wouldn't, you know, imagine like using modern technology, you know, with an actual budget and some polish to do the kinds of horror experiences that we really want, you know, that we want, you know, the ghost stories, the paranormal kind of stuff like that, and just really doing it right without having to add all the bullshit. It's like they have to add all the bullshit because they're already, it's like when you kind of already spending so much money, there's sales expectations from the publishers. Like you can't, like no one's going to say, hey, I got this, let me pitch this game and it's going to cost X. And X is, you know, as much as every other product they're going to, and you know, it's going to be, it's going to take 24 months and it's going to cost just about as much as it would for us to do every other title that's coming out during the holiday season. It's like, you, okay, where's the multiplayer? Where's the, you know, the flat, you know, we need some high quality voice acting, all this bullshit. It's like, there's no way to get away from it, I don't think, with the way that the publisher system's set up now. Unless it's just the indie guys doing it. And so we need to be okay with that, I think, going forward.
I mean,
you know?
I think, I mean, looking at Amnesia, like that's a great horror game. And that could not have been done by a big studio because, that game in itself, there was an aspect of pace that studio people would probably be like, this isn't a great pace, but the pace was perfect for what they were trying to do, and they made a great game. And I think that mid-tier is probably the highest we're going to get, and I think that I think Josh is 100% right. That's fine. Like, graphics-wise on that game, that was a scary-ass game, and it looked fucking pretty good. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to hold my breath for a next-gen unbelievable experience because, frankly speaking, those people want to make multiplayer games. They want you. An explosion is kind of, in my mind, what, you know, shows off how well your graphics engine works. And an explosion in a horror movie doesn't make a whole lot of sense usually. You know what I'm saying? Like those kind of, there's certain aspects of having those graphics that just, I think, are lost in terms of that.
You could wow people that, with like a real super realistic melting face. You know, or viscera, like that's just like popping out of the screen, you know?
Yeah.
Like Oculus Rift, and you're like having to like dig a key out of somebody's guts.
Oh.
Like, picture that. It's like 3D, and you gotta like look to get down inside of the body. That would be cool.
Well, and that's where I think, like,
the Connect, that Unreal Engine.
The possibilities of something like that, I mean, that's like, and I think it's untapped. I don't think people are gonna shoot for that because, you know, who plays the Kinect? Well, it's, you know, I mean, they think
the tech,
it's
because the hardware sucks. The tech sucks.
Well, the hardware. That's, I mean, outside of that, I mean, it's like there's different ways that you can engage the horror audience outside of not engaging them at all.
Well,
you know, I think that's kind of
the big using like the Kinect or whatever with like the augmented reality stuff would be better.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, there's a 3DS game that does this, like where you don't you like see ghosts through the
spirit camera?
Does that
game.
Do
yeah?
Spirit camera does that do the augmented reality stuff? Because that kind of stuff, now that's cool, and that's something we couldn't do 10 years ago. You know where it's like, well, walk around your house and there's, you know, you're hunting ghosts in your own home and you see them through the screen. Like that sounds
cool.
That, you know,
is cool.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I wanted to try the Fatal Frame and the spirit camera stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think Ethan, like, literally started going through my head last year when Amnesia, like, kind of took off. I was like, and I really don't mean this as a knock against the game, but it's going to really come across that way. It's like, is this as good as we can hope for now? Is this it? And I'm with you guys. I completely understand the reality, but it doesn't mean I'm not frustrated that I'm not going to get that huge absorbing experience. I think part of my frustration starts to stem from the other kind of more recent title that stands out was the first Dead Space, and we're seeing where that franchise is going. And, you know, it's following along the same progression that, you know, Resident Evil almost had. And because I love the first game through and through, and that might actually be my last gasp as far as like a AAA publisher really getting behind a franchise. And they've had to do what they had to do to keep that series you know, selling the numbers they needed to sell. But it doesn't mean, like, I mean, even Dead Space 1 didn't feel perfect to me. Like, it still went a little bit too far into the action side at times, but I just know I'm not going to get that game and it that I really want, and that kind of frustrates me. I just feel like there's a fan base for it, and I don't know how to reach that fan base in a way that doesn't turn the game into something that it wasn't really meant to be.
Well, I think that fan base feels a bit shunned. I think And I think I agree with you. Like, I want that big budget type horror movie, feels.
This gets back to, like, the root of why I like video games. It's the fact that they can just rip out, like, emotions or reactions from me that no other medium can do because I'm interacting with them. Because, I mean, to me, Dead Space the first time and Resident Evil the first time, when I don't know the rules of the world, like, and I really get into it, it's going to scare me more than any movie possibly can, because there's just that extra step of feeling involved in the world, and I feel like it's selling the industry short if we can't get that experience. It just really fucks with people's heads.
Well, and again, I think that there's that aspect of being shunned that those fans have kind of been like, well, I mean, I think they're all kind of like us in this, in terms of, like, they're like, oh, we're not going to get that. We don't have to worry about it. But that being said, there is some incredible, incredible stuff that is, mm-hmm. that is coming out, some scary ass shit that's coming out, that has come out, that will be coming out, because just like in the movie industry, this always happens. And this may happen with gaming too. Okay. I'll hold on a little bit of hope is that you see how the indie movie industry worked in terms of the horror movies and those kind of movies that nobody was touching, and now those movies are winning all kinds of awards, and then there's this cycle that happens where Hollywood looks down like, oh, you know what, maybe we can start, you know, going after a Paranormal Activity. Now, they always fucking, you know, beat into the ground, obviously, but I mean, we could get that resurgence. The fact of the matter is, the franchises that you know and love now that have ever been considered horror will not be horror in the future. We need new franchises. We need someone to take a chance. And we need someone to drop the budget down. I'm not talking about dropping the budget down so, like, you know, the visuals look bad or whatnot, but, like, some of the just the needlessness, you know, some of the over the top, you know, I guess maybe even looking at, like, the advertising campaigns and stuff like that. Like, to sell a horror movie, you don't need a whole lot. You need that grab, you know, that thing like, oh, like, that's startling. Like, I want to investigate that. Like, that's what horror's about. A lot of it is investigating something that you know you shouldn't, but something draws you into that. And that's what they need to realize is that hook. And once they get that hook and they realize that, you can sell all kinds of copies. I mean, Dead Space did not do bad. Like, that's the thing that, like, it blows my – Dead Space did not sell poorly.
But –
no, very few survival horror games sold poorly, but they didn't sell as much as
– yeah.
Captain Action. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's just
Captain Action.
You know?
Okay.
What we're saying is another publisher needs to pick up Insane and see what Guillermo del Toro really wants to do.
I was pumped for that. I was pumped.
Like, what
for
was that going to be?
I don't know.
Do we have any idea?
It's someone said Lovecraftian.
Okay.
Someone said Lovecraftian horror, and I was in. Like, I was sold.
No, now I'm looking at the giant game list from our notes. Of our of all these you know, our favorite horror, you know, best examples of horror games here, and almost all of them, besides a few of the, like, the indie games or really old games, they're all shooters. This is my problem with it. Like, if like Ethan, like you're saying, like, if, you know, well, and this is already kind of happening, you know, I guess, in, to some degree, like, you see, like, oh, Dead Space is sold a little bit, let's keep making sequels because sequels work. There's automatically, like, a certain amount of sales you can assume, that kind of thing. It's like, try to reach a wider audience. What does that mean? It's, and everybody, the industry is, it's all about first person shooters, first and third person shooters. So how do you see a, I don't want to say like AAA title, but like, you know, a large publisher putting some marketing dollars behind it, some time and some money and a good development crew behind a horror game, a big horror game, like, what kind of game, besides a shooter, what kind of game would sell well enough to pay for all that on the back end? Like, what kind of game is that?
Well, and I don't think the fact that any of these games are shooters or not is how I always compare this is the difference between Alien and Aliens, okay? You can have combat. You can fight back up to a point, okay? The point that you fight back to, you can't ever be in a point with any of these games, and why I have a lot of shooters on my list is the horror is still in charge. That's still dictating the pace. You're not blowing the fuck out of everything. You're not in control of the situation. As soon as you are in control of the situation, the horror kind of ends a little bit. And I'm not saying Aliens, anybody was really in control, but they fought back a little bit better than they did in Alien. And so these games, they can have a shooter. You can have shooter elements. You can kill things. I've got no issue with that. But you can't take it past a point. You can't take it up to what Resident Evil did 5 and up, is you can't have people jump kicking and flying through the air and having these superhuman parts. I think what the industry needs to understand is you can have shooter elements. You don't have to be a shooter. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's what
you
can't. I mean, well, hang on.
It'd be tough to sell a game.
Sure, sure. There's a better way to make the horror shooter. But what I'm saying is it possible? I'm asking. Is it possible?
I want to explore this. So,
Without the shooter parts. Like, could you make a horror? Because think about all your favorite horror films. Like, most of the time, your protagonist can't even really defend themselves. That's why I like games like Clock Tower or any of those games where you can't defend yourself. And you're like, all you got, like the Silent Hill remake. It was just, you got to run. Like, there shit hits the fan, get the fuck out because you cannot kill the bad guys. What kind of game can you make where your protagonist is not just blasting everything? Like, how does that even look? Like, you can't. Could you make a third person? Like, is it The Walking Dead? You know, is that it? I mean, is that as far as it can go? I mean, is it?
Look at Amnesia.
It's
got to
be a puzzle game or an RPG.
Amnesia. You had a lantern.
Great. Yeah,
because you know there's you're a first person perspective. And your goal is to avoid things. And I believe in that game, and I'm trying to think back into playing this, is, you know, you'd slowly go insane as you saw whatever you were looking at. So you were hiding, but you were also avoiding looking at it, which was kind of funny because that's actually an element of horror movies. It's kind of, you know, that we've always known is when you hide your eyes and stuff like that, that was actually an element that worked into it. That worked because the atmosphere worked. Mm-hmm. So I think why this confuses people is because I think a lot of big publishers don't want to commit to putting that much resource into an atmosphere, into not a mechanic. You know what I mean?
Picture Amnesia on a box, like on a shelf in GameStop, like for the Xbox 360. No, that wouldn't happen. People wouldn't buy that.
I mean,
the average gamer doesn't want that. That's my point.
The issue is we're still figuring out. I think we can agree, or I would say that, you know, first-person perspective for horror games is much more engrossing. Granted, you know, we got our kicks off the third-person ones, but the possibilities are a lot more for first-person perspective. But it's been tough to pull off first-person games and sell them that don't have that action hook. And that's where, you know, there is a wall with Amnesia. Although I thought Amnesia, you know, it was brilliant in that regard that you were defenseless and it was first person. But actually what popped into my mind, Josh, was kind of like I look at Metroid Prime and how they managed to do exploration in a first person perspective that I found really engaging. And then I also kind of have hopes. I might be a little too close recently to this game, so we'll see how I feel about this next year. But with Dishonored, and that they've pulled off first-person stealth, but they also don't make you hate the game when you get into combat. They found a balance of if you want to play it action, that's there. It's and it doesn't break the game, but it almost pushes you to play it stealth, even though you feel like you have the choice. And they have to find that balance with some of these games that there are some sort of they have to make exploration engaging and part of, you know, how to advance the game itself, but also still have this underlying, I don't know, they still have this underlying working action game in it that you have that option, but it's more rewarding to play the other way. But I don't know what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I almost look at playing DayZ and those kind of games. Like, you could play it, and I think this is kind of the progression with those kind of the games. And, you know, with the War Z coming out here, you know, the next, you know, few months or whatnot, or the beta coming out on October 31st, like, to see how that game's going to progress. But there is that kind of element built in there, is that by going and attacking everybody and stuff, you're making yourself more vulnerable. So you have that action element, but that horror element is ingrained as well, because just like in a horror movie, if you go out, start attacking everything, you're going to attract a lot of attention to yourself. So I think there's a lot to be said for that element as well, is that there's a risk and reward type situation that's given to the user, because, I mean, again, they want to have that freedom and flexibility. And I realize that the mainstream gamer does not want to be told you can't shoot anything. You can't. They don't want to be told that. But to be able to still try to push them in that direction, but also give them the choice that, hey, you can go and fucking shoot all of these demons if you want to. It's going to be a tough game. But I think you saying Dishonored is a really good, actually kind of a point and kind of a good direction that we could possibly lead, is that you can kind of, again, filter them in a situation, you know, or direct them into a gameplay style, but also have this option over here. This option may not be fleshed out. Just like in that game, people said if you play it action packed, you're not playing it right or whatnot. But yeah. I mean, again, you still have it, you know. So, and maybe that will push people to play it the way that you more than likely should play, and thus get more enjoyment out of it.
There's got to be some action hooks, like, or some. It's really the payoff, like the reward payoff moments that we're talking about, that the game just kind of have to have, I think, for most people, like the average person, to enjoy these games. Like, even if you're not,
like what if it was, you know, you could survive whatever the situation is, but you don't really solve it. Like, as far as, I don't know, I mean, the best thing is, like, you're killing these ghosts or whatever this supernatural thing is, rather than capturing it or finding out more about it and giving you those types of rewards.
Yeah, yeah. Or even just having the actual in-your-face combat just not take place very often, like the better parts of the Condemned series. Mm. You know, just having some...
Would you guys count that as a horror game?
That first one... I didn't play enough of the second one, but the first one, that was a horror game to me. I mean, I experienced it like one. My body told me I was playing a horror game just because it was so, you know, weird and creepy. But
I try to think of those moments. Like, that's why Metroid Prime jumped out to me, was there are certain aspects of that game that you really do feel alone on this strange world, and you can get, and it always. It was, they're very isolated moments, but I even had it. I work in Super Metroid. When you get to the derelict ship, like, it's kind of creepy, and it could have taken a turn, but it immediately pulled you back into the action world of Metroid. But I was like, there are these isolated moments in games like that they've never built full games off of, and I think there's something there.
Well, I think there's another issue too. We're talking about games or levels from games that we really loved, that were really fantastic. And I think most people, when you put them in front of it for, you know, a small period of time, they would find it somewhat thrilling. But just like the best horror films, they're just they usually max out about an hour and a half, you know, how can something just about, you know, hunting ghosts or, you know, the paranormal kind of stuff or like those more psychological thrillers, like, how can they last for a long enough game? If it's a single player experience and there's no multiplayer in it, it's got to be meaty and it's got to have some replay value to it, or it's got to have some multiplayer component, because other humans always make for replayable, you know, just usually, unless it's just straight, you know, co-op through a campaign. But like, you gotta add to that extra value if you're gonna, again, I think, like, the goal there here is, like, how do we get one of these, like, on a shelf, right? For 60 bucks or 50 bucks or whatever at GameStop. Like, we've seen games that have a, like, you know, randomly generated world or, you know, random elements to it. Like, you know, what if you had all these different situations of, like, all your different genres, you know, you got your slasher flick with your, you know, it's like Michael Myers hunting down Laurie Strode and she can't really do much to defend herself. She's just got to run and hide and stuff like Clock Tower, you know, and you got your Silent Hills where, you know what, you got a weapon and you got a gun, but things just, there's too much of, you know, weird shit to fight. You just got to run most of the time. You don't have to kill stuff, but you can if you really want to get into combat, you know, those kinds of things. But, you know, why can't we have a game and maybe it's got co-op in it, but like Left 4 Dead, but with these different scenarios, you know what I mean? Like, oh, we lost Ethan, but you know, like what about all these, maybe somebody puts together a game that has a random level generator that comes up with a completely different horror genre every time you play. Think if you just fired up Left 4 Dead and it was like, what game are we in now? Oh, we're in some suburbs and there's like an unstoppable force coming after us and we gotta, you know, go find his mother's sweatshirt and put it on and pretend, you know, like what, you know what I mean? Like that's, yeah. You know, play on the classic horror, you know, the genres and the tropes and all that stuff and throw them all in there, you know, give them the kitchen sink.
I kind of want to spoil a recent movie, but I won't go that far.
Right.
Basically, you have these, you know, you have the level generator, but you also have like this a scenario generator with certain rules around certain types of creatures, and it just loads them up and drops you in a scenario, and you have to survive, and you also have to discover what's the force that's coming against you. That could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, like the reveal of that even would be interesting to me. Of like, you know, you're going through the motions of whatever, and it's like, what's gonna try to kill us now? And it's like, oh shit, it's, you know, it's zombies or it's ghosts. It's like, oh fuck, our guns and baseball bats don't do anything against a ghost. Like, what do we do? And like, well, we gotta go to the cemetery and dig up their bones and burn them. Or, you know, like, you could change up the goals and all that stuff. You can make it multiplayer. And I don't mind multiplayer in horror situations.
You want a supernatural game? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't think I would mind multiplayer, you know, in these games because I can sit next to somebody during a horror movie or playing, like, I played Eternal Darkness with sitting next to a buddy and that was still freaky as hell. You know, like, you can be scared next to other people. So being in a game, it's like, it's only not scary in multiplayer if you have an advantage because of the numbers. If it's just a matter of like, oh my god, who's he gonna kill next? It's not like, you know, oh, we got all these, we're badass because we got all these dudes, you know what I mean? Like, it's not really a multiplayer. It doesn't have to be something that takes the scares out, I don't think.
No, like, absolutely. And it's kind of easy to get angry at Dead Space for kind of taking that step in that direction to, you know. No, the horror of that game was being alone, but there are other games that have pulled off horror in group settings and that make working as a group a requirement, and I think it could be better for that as well.
I just feel like that variety is something that would maybe be required for, mm-hmm. because otherwise you're just trying to sell more of the spectacle. And spectacle, again, it just doesn't add replayability or longevity to a game. And I just don't think you're going to put out a, you know, 4-hour single player only game on the shelves. Like, mainstream horror is not going to survive like that, I don't think.
No, yeah, you're right. It's just how long of a dose can you take? And that might be one of Dead Space's brilliant moves, was that I think just about every time I was getting worn out by surviving, it changed it up a little bit. But, yeah. I still like our sandbox idea of come up with this rule set for the supernatural game. You and a buddy, right, and yeah. here's your demon case today, or here's your hunt, and hell, yeah. just do it off the fucking show. They've got, you know what, 8 seasons of there's over 100+ episodes, 100+ scenarios that have nothing to do with that main storyline. I'd play that.
You could randomize the players too. Like, yeah. This round you're a cop and you've got a gun and you're capable, you know. And the next round you're like, well, you're a doctor or something. And you know what? You can patch up the other players, but you can't fight, and or you're not athletic or whatever. You know, just like different types of characters.
And then it's earlier cousin. Why not make an X-Files game? Make a more investigation type of game. It doesn't have to necessarily be survival, but I still think there's a lot
people don't
in the horror
realm
to like discovery.
Yeah, but people don't want to just walk around a room and like look for clues. Not in a mainstream game. I'm not obviously we do. Well, I'm just saying.
No, let's go to a mainstream publisher today and say I want to make an adventure game and it's a horror game.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I want to make Ghostbusters point and click adventure.
Well, I kind of look at what the secret world was trying to do with something along those lines. It is a really great concept, but it kind of fades fast unless you're really ingrained in it. So, I mean, it is kind of difficult to
a lot of cool ideas.
Pure investigation.
Yeah, that was a valiant effort, but ultimately, besides the Tom Selleck blowjob, that I just didn't get it. I couldn't get into the game.
I was gonna say I don't play that game because of why I thought I would play that game.
Let's focus on some of our what we consider the failures in video game horror. Just we kind of came up with a list here, but what stood out to you guys?
Oh man, this was tough. I mean, definitely you can't go into a conversation like this without mentioning Resident Evil's past 4. You know, I think 4 pushed. Was right, you know, with the mobs and how quickly things, you know, kind of went to hell. That maintained that horror vibe. But then, you know, 5 was okay. But then you started to get really tough, and like Chris had huge biceps, and like everybody.
There's no horror in 5 at all.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's you know again aliens.
But I would argue they weren't trying to make it horror in 5. Like 4.
And that's my question. That's what I always think with these games is were they actually trying to? I think the other thing that I had, Jericho was another example.
Yes.
Were they trying for it to be horror? You attach Clive Barker. Clive Barker hasn't really been known for making like action movies, you know? And so you see Jericho, you're like, fucking Clive Barker? I mean, The Undying was a pretty decent game, you know, for the time. I mean, it was pretty creepy.
Clive Barker writes fucked up stories.
Yeah, really
like he has some cool stuff. If they just had taken something he'd already written and turned that into a fucking game, that would have been cool. But when they do that thing where it's like, oh, this guy's involved in making a game, like it's like Spielberg's Boom Blocks. Like, what? You didn't need him for that. Go make a fucking E.T. game or something. You know, like why are you fucking don't attach? Why attach somebody to some shit? Like, sorry.
Josh, what jumped out to you?
I don't know. There's a bunch of shit ones. I guess, on the NES, there were a ton of crappy horror games. Like there was a bunch of movie tie-in games, and LJN was involved in a lot of those. And I was like, Friday the 13th. That one was bad, but the gameplay was bad. But it's actually had some pretty scary moments.
Mm-hmm.
But the Nightmare on Elm Street game was just the dumbest fucking horror game maybe I've ever played. That game was so bad. Like, you take the whole reason that those movies were scary is because it's like Freddy's going to get you no matter what because everybody's got to sleep eventually. And like when you're, you know, it's like your dream's going to get turned against you or whatever, and his tongue's coming out of the phone licking your face, and the claws are coming out of the bed, and like all this terrible shit. In the game, it's a side-scrolling platformer, a bad one, and you're like the Dream Warriors. But you don't have your powers until like you get like limited power-up time, and you can be like the basketball guy and stuff. And they didn't even play the song by Dokken. like didn't even try. It was so bad. And then when you fought Freddy, it was just like it was reminiscent of the shitty combat from like Wolverine or well really any of the LJN games. Completely missed the point of the essence of it, you know. It would have been way better at like the parts of the Friday the 13th game where you're in the house and you're like going room to room and then boom, Jason just appears. Like that was pretty kind of cool. I thought like, you know, maybe Nightmare on Elm Street should have been more of like a, you know, like Shadowgate or Deja Vu or something. Like, you know, the NES point and click stuff, like that actually kind of worked for me. I actually like that style, and doing something like that where, you know, or even just like that Clock Tower style, that was actually technically that was kind of point and click
See,
too.
It's making me think. I like what I liked about Amnesia and one of our other favorites, Eternal Darkness, is any games that tries to play with you psychologically. Now, mm-hmm. granted, Eternal Darkness had some limitations, but just the fact that an Amnesia going crazy was as much of a danger as anything. And I think if you could make a pretty sweet Nightmare on Elm Street game if you were constantly trying to figure out whether or not your character was really awake or not.
Yeah, yeah. Really, yeah, instead of just like, the meter's going down. Anyway. Like, yeah, have a like, you know, oh shit, you're starting to doze off. Like, because everybody's got signs. Like it is scary trying to stay awake in real life. And like, if you stay up for too long, bad things start happening to you, right? It's like, you know, I mean, like, I saw shit. I saw the things, the shadow creatures from Ghost. The movie Ghost. I saw them one time after staying up for 48 hours.
Oh. I thought I was invincible for a good 15-minute period.
I mean, like I said, you can hallucinate. So like, you know.
I see Grimace. I see Grimace.
That's pretty good. That's actually okay. If he's delivering, like, double cheese.
It's always a Happy Meal, but it's always got someone's head in it. So I don't know. There's a kind of like a happiness. You see
it's probably a shrunken head. Those aren't very big boxes. Well, when you're a kid, though, the Happy Meal box seemed larger than it didn't actually work.
Yeah,
that's an excellent point, Josh. One of my missteps that maybe started making us head down this path was I was always really frustrated with the game Fear, the first one, because it had such good horror moments. And then I'm stuck playing a shooter, like back and forth, back and forth. And I could never get into a rhythm with it. And I just, every time I find, like, and I've mentioned this throughout the show, I just have these standout moments in certain games that I want the game to be just that, and they don't seem to exist. And Fear is like the epitome of that to me. Like, I love half this game, and the rest of it's just okay. And because I didn't expect anything out of Fear, and just where they start going with that story in that first one, and you start to kind of hallucinate or whatever, and things would start to get really messed up. I was like, just keep doing that. Like, don't give me the gun. Just make me try to figure out what's going on in this world. And I don't know. Maybe there aren't very many gamers that are interested in things like that, but I feel like,
you know,
that's what I want.
Anyway. You know, what's funny is like, I felt the same way about Fear at the time. Like, I really enjoyed the scary parts, like the Alma stuff. Mm-hmm. And then like, you'd just be like shooting at dudes. But I enjoyed it all the way through just because of the horror stuff was that good, but the shooting was actually not bad. And I actually enjoyed the shooting stuff when they released the free, like the multiplayer portion of the game for free. And everyone just started downloading that, and like, you could, just the multiplayer, there was a shit ton of people playing that all the time, and like, we had a bunch of people, I knew a bunch of people that would always play that on LAN and stuff, and I loved that game as a shooter separately, and I also liked the horror stuff from like the campaign, so it was like, I liked both parts of that game actually. It just like seemed like they just didn't necessarily belong together, but if you'd taken all that, the scary stuff, and put it into like a Amnesia style game or something, like that would be fucking awesome. I mean,
it was fine. I was in the mood for one or the other, never in the mood for both.
Yeah.
That's
ultimately my problem with
most. But that's what we're talking about. Like, all these games we're talking about earlier. It's like, you know, Dead Space, or the you know, Alien franchise shooter games, or what Resident Evil's turned into. Both of the Clive Barker games, really. It's like, they got all these horror elements, and then no matter what, at the end of the day, you're going to end up shooting like 10,000 rounds into generic bad guys. Like, that's no matter what, it's going to happen, because somebody thinks that that's what everybody wants. And then now that everyone thinks they need that because they're used to that, it's like, well, that's what I do. That's what video games is. It's to shoot the guns. You got to, oh, there's bad guys. What's your first instinct? I see bad guys. I got to shoot them. Like, why can't you see bad guys and then fucking run? Like, Call of Duty has ruined people. Like, you see a terrorist with a fucking bomb, get the fuck, run. Like, you see, you know what I mean? Like, you got to get out of there, man. You don't just go running guns blazing. You're not the hero. Why do you always have to be the damn hero? I don't know. I feel like there's a psychological disadvantage here for all these gamers. If an actual good horror game comes out, there's no way they'll be able to appreciate it. Because they think they can take it on. No matter what pops up on the screen, the dude's gonna be like, oh, whatever, man. I'll take them all, punch a ghost in the face. I'm a ghost. I'm a killer of ghost face. I'm a ghost face killer. For like, for real, legitimately. I will kill his face. Like, there's too many assholes that think they could roundhouse kick a fucking zombie dog. I'm like, you are not Mila Jovovich. You're not that good looking. You don't have those moves, and you're not in a fucking movie, dude.
You're not the fifth element.
No.
Well, she also has that dress with that leg slit, which makes it easier to kick. So, I mean, you don't have that either. Or if you, maybe if you had some
the
tights.
The perfect fucking zombie dog kicking dress. Like, the perfect dress for that. You know, Fear was kind of like the video game equivalent of the first Resident Evil film. You know? Like, that was really... Huh. It was pretty... Well, no. Fear had better horror elements than Resident Evil.
Yeah. First one, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I take that back. Fear actually did a pretty good
horror.
Job.
They were never horror. They were action.
But the first one had had way more of that build up and stuff, and the shit popping around corners and stuff in the background. And there was it's been a while since you've seen it. The first one actually did have way more horror elements than all the rest of the films did. Mm. But that's neither here nor it's over there, but it's not here.
I mean, you make a good point though, Josh. As far as like we're getting trained to. Think certain things about horror games. And we said earlier, I don't know what our tolerance would be for how long can a true horror game last? How long can we tolerate it? But I kind of want to see something, push that envelope a bit. And so we can get those answers because, I was kind of with you that you need to keep changing up the scenario, but, What is my limit? I mean, how long can I play? How long can I play an Amnesia? How long can I play, I was also thinking of Dear Esther. As far as it took me the entire game to figure out, is this game going to try to scare me? So I was on edge the entire time. So I was fucking worn out after 90 minutes.
That was a great setup for a horror game that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like that game could have been like it set me up. I was like really. Uneasy. I'm like, man, if some shit's gonna pop out. There was tons of little cues even. Like it was really well done that way. And like nothing happened. I was like, this is a missed opportunity. Like it's a shitty poem is what this game is, and it should have been a cool horror game.
Do you guys have any games that are kind of on your upcoming must playlist as far as horror experiences you haven't got to? My big one is the one that's kind of gotten the most hype lately is, and I don't really even know to start anymore because there's so many different versions, but just play anything involving the Slender Man because I haven't gotten to that.
Yeah,
there's a ton of them. Yeah. I definitely want to try that. I think there's look on Steam, Greenlight, there's a ton on there. Josh actually talked about Haunted Investigations at one point a couple weeks back. That looks great.
Looks better, and I was trying to tell you what this was. I couldn't remember the name of it. It's just because it's called Paranormal Game. It's like it's got a generic name. It's just like hard to find it like by searching. But I found this thing, and I saw it. Patrick Klepek of currently of Giant Bomb. He had played it on an internet stream, and he was not into it at all. But it was because of the setting he was playing it in with a room full of people. But this game looks like. It looks like Paranormal Activity, but like in game form. But it looks really, really well done. It's got like, and it's got random hauntings. Like every night you go to sleep, and then you wake up, and it's another day. And then like you don't know what's gonna happen. You don't know what's gonna happen. There's like furniture's gonna move, apparition's gonna appear, whatever. But it's like the whole thing takes place in your house, and it's just one day after another of like fucked up stuff. And that one, I was trying to tell you about that, I think, on show, like, or off air maybe a few weeks back, and I just was like, what the fuck is the name of that game? And I couldn't remember it. It's a paranormal game.
Oh, there's a ton on Greenlight. I mean, you talk about the indie scene, yeah, man, they're fucking getting it. Another weird, kind of weird game, I think just because maybe people have been talking about it, is Corpse Party, which is a anime-type kind of game. I don't know why. I think this seems interesting to me, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. Now that's coming from people that really like, those kind of games. But
it seems,
I mean, it's like an elementary school full of kids getting murdered. I mean, it seems freaking horrifying. So I'm curious to see if it actually is or not. It's every time I read about it, it's like, wow, that's really intense. And I've never seen anything to that level in a video game. I mean, so I'm curious. It's more curious. I don't know if maybe it's horror as much, but it seems pretty fucking fucked up. So I want to just dig into it.
I think that's the back of the box says pretty fucking fucked up.
Pretty fucking fucked up. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Okay, so I've got a list here.
Let's see what else. Good.
So I never tried the Siren games, and the one that came out on around the launch of the PS3, it was like a PSN. I don't know if it was PSN exclusive. It was like very early on with the service, yeah, and yeah. It was a Siren Blood Curse, and you could buy it in like episodes. I always heard really good things about that, and I like Japanese horror, like just in mm-hmm, general. Mm-hmm. I always prefer like the Japanese versions of all those, you know, Ju-on and the Ring, you know, Ringu and stuff like that. Those are always better to me. I like their style. It's something about their style, which is just like, it's just foreign enough to me to like put me on edge automatically, because I'm like, I don't know really what to expect, because it's kind of like weird and different to me. So the formula is sometimes just change up a little bit from the, you know, regular American stuff. So I've always wanted to try that. At some point, I'm going to play Siren. And then there's two games coming out. One of them comes out, I think, Friday of this week, and that's Lucius, where you play as, like, like Damien. And yeah. You're in this house, and you're like this little son of the devil or something. You're a kid who is what? What'd you say? I'm sorry.
Nothing. I was making it. I said, are you a rabbit? I was making a yeah reference.
Oh. No, but it looks pretty fucked up. I saw a video where you're like, it's like your butler or your dad or stepdad or something, and you set him on fire. And like, I'm like, what? This looks it looks really messed up. If it's well made, it's going to turn a lot of people into psycho killers. And the other one, and I don't remember the name of it right now, but we saw this pretty recently. There was a video put out. It was a game where it's like a first person game where you're a toddler, and you crawl out of your crib every night, and like you can hide under shit, like under the couch or under the coffee table and stuff. And there's like weird shit happening, like windows are rattling, and there was shadows moving around the house and stuff. It looks super creepy, and you are a little child. Which is like, what's more helpless than a toddler? Like, nothing. I mean, like, this toddler's not going to end up being a badass, you know? He's not going to be...
He can't dual wield...
No, he can't...
Magnums or anything.
No, he can't, fashion a, you know, a wooden stake out of a chair leg or anything like that. He doesn't have whittling capabilities. Like, so, you know, small child, yeah, he's maybe going to throw a juice box. And he's lucky if he hits. He's definitely gonna. He has probably already shit himself. It actually is an advantage.
He's equipped for it though. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I don't.
Out the game with shit in your pants. So.
Like, it's bad if you get your diaper changed, right? Because then you're like, man, I'm way too fresh right now. Because that sound could give you away. It sounds like it's like a wet Play-Doh factory. You don't want that. Like that would give your position away, especially like, you know, demons and bad guys and ghosts and shit. They always have really good fucking hearing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they hear a pin drop, you know, or a squeaky fart. It's like, oh, here they come. They were walking by the doorway, but then you did this thing and something creaked and they came back in. That reminds me of, maybe actually my favorite horror game. It's not on my list. And that's, Don't Shit Your Pants. That is a great game.
Oh boy!
It's a text input game, but there are graphics, very rudimentary graphics.
Yeah, too. You can look that up. I want to wrap up this show with any of our favorite examples that we haven't mentioned so far. We've got a pretty big list here, so I want to make sure you give the shout outs that you would like. I will start, of course, with the first game I can remember scaring me to the point that I stopped playing it for a long period of time, and that was System Shock 2.
That was really messed up. That was a sci-fi first-person shooter. That was a great balance of like, you know, was, you know, did Bioshock give you that feeling too at all?
I was well. I was actually worried that it would. It kind of did at the very, very beginning. Because honestly, the splicers were actually, they were so messed up, they were pretty terrifying. But it didn't have it didn't almost have like a supernatural element. Like everything was so grounded a little bit in reality that it ultimately never, the horror elements to it stopped for me.
Oh, but those voices, man. Holy shit. Like you could hear those fucking things talking. Yeah.
You're right.
I felt like I was playing a game wrong, System Shock 2, and like I was defenseless. I didn't feel like I could fend off anything that was coming after me, and I didn't know when I'd be attacked. I didn't know what it was going to be, and I just completely psyched myself out, and it was awesome.
It was nuts because you had all kinds of capabilities. Yet you could get psychic capabilities, guns, all this stuff, and you still fuck. That is probably one of the scariest games on this list because not only did they give you everything you could possibly need to fucking fight these things off, it still scared the shit out of you. Fucking A.
If you never played System Shock 2, but you did play Portal, picture GLaDOS, but she doesn't have a sense of humor. And she only wants to murder you at every turn. And you're on a fucking spaceship. You are boned. It's pretty cool. Like the evil AI thing. Plus, the weird, monkey thing and the midwives? Those things. If you play that game with the new texture pack and stuff. By the way, that game just got a patch. From some of the original developers, unofficially, but from real dudes, that and the whatever Thief game, but use the same engine at the time, whatever they got a new patch and it runs with you don't have to do all that fuckery to get it going. It runs on a modern system without any bullshit. Yeah. And it has co-op and the co-op in that game is actually really, really good because how limited you are with all your supplies and resources. And it's like, you got to split that between two people then. So you got you got another body, you got another dude there, but you're not necessarily more capable by having a second player. And, but anyways, the texture pack, you add that on there and all the enemies get way freakier. Those midwives, they're these weird, undead cyborg pregnant ladies and they're real freaky. Oh, and they talk to you too and it's real creepy. There's mommy like lines and stuff that are just like, I don't need that. I don't want it. Don't want it.
Ethan, what you got?
I actually didn't put this down on my list, but I think in terms of atmosphere, this Stalker, the first and the third definitely had some of the best atmosphere. The artificial intelligence in that game was sometimes janky, but always unpredictable. And that game still, that some of the better moments, especially going down in the labs. Also want to throw The Thing in there. Not the greatest game, but they were moving in a very cool direction, especially with the whole idea that suddenly your teammates can turn into a thing, and fuck with you. So I definitely had to throw that out there. And then the Penumbra series, pretty dated looking now, but that was a creepy fucking series of games, regardless. That scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, anybody that's played Amnesia should go back and try those out. But I got a Stalker, definitely just, again, the sense of just being completely alone and in a unpredictable open world. It was just I never knew when I was going to be attacked by a radioactive dog out of nowhere. Everything felt really alive and really creepy. And again, I felt kind of defenseless with how, you really had to pay attention to how much ammo you had. And it was much more survival. It was a survival based game, but I didn't expect it to cross into the horror realm at all. And it was still pretty, pretty damn scary.
Did either of you guys play Cold Fear?
Yes.
No.
I remember that coming out around the time of the Thing game. Was it good? I remember
Cold Fear.
I remember it having a good,
amazing.
Yeah, that's what I remember from it. And I guess it is. Okay. Okay.
I got to a point in that game. I can tell you, I got to the point in that game where I was like, I don't want to play this anymore. It started out amazing. The ship, it was moving around.
Yeah, it was like Resident Evil on a boat.
Yeah, but
before Revelations came out for 3DS.
Quick.
Okay. I gotta say,
take us home, Josh.
the first survival horror game that I ever played. It was actually also the first game I ever talked about on as a guest on The Horrible Show, like 2 years ago. And that is Adventure for the Atari. Now, most people will tell you that Haunted House was the first survival horror game that ever made. That was the one that, where you just had, you were just two eyes and you had a little, you had a candle to light your way and you had to, whatever. That game was dumb.
And they remade
that. That game was dumb. Yeah. Recently. And that was also dumb. But fucking Adventure, I was so scared when those dragons would come out, because you knew those dragons were hanging out. And when you walked into a room and you saw them, and they're jump, and you're like, fuck, and you're just mad dash. You got to run, and hope, just hope that, like, he gets distracted by the fucking bat or whatever. Like, you have to just pray, because those things will just, you're limited by, you're going through a fucking maze, you don't have the sword, and then the dragon will just go straight through the walls, and it hunts you down. It was like, before Scissor Man, before Tyrant or Nemesis, the dragon from Adventure was like the first survival horror enemy. And I was just, I shit my pants several times as a, no, it's not, I was a toddler, so that's not true. I was already, I'd already shit.
But it still happened.
But yeah, that Adventure for me was like the first horror game that I ever played. And I still have a terrifying memories of that.
That's awesome.
I think if I played it today, I think it would hold up for me.
Okay.
Because the dragons are still frightening. It's like because the graphics are like, it's not like shitty 3D games, you know. Like the graphics are so simple, the representative. And by now we've played to have, you know, after playing VVVVVV, it's like I don't, you know, the graphics look pretty modern by those standards. So, but those dragons are so fucking scary. Nothing. Neither you guys.
No, I don't. No, I played Venture. I didn't play Adventure.
Oh, you didn't even play it. Ethan, did you play Adventure?
Yeah. No, I was.
Oh playing, man, playing. We're gonna play some fucking Adventure, and you're gonna shit yourself. I promise. You're gonna be like, fuck these dragons! What? You're gonna hate dragons. You're gonna hate them. You're gonna murder them every time you see them. You're gonna be like, oh, How to Train My Dragon? No, How to Stab My Dragon in the fucking throat before it grows up and tries to fucking eat me. And I gotta go find some bats to try to carry away.
Is that the sequel or the prequel?
it's the reimagining by New Line Cinema. That's all I got.
All right, that's all you got.
That's all I got.
Well, I think we solved all the issues now. Probably, I'm gonna still just be upset every time a new game fails to meet my expectations, but I think at least you guys brought me back down to earth a little bit.
We got away without mentioning any FMV games, by the way.
Good work.
I'm like, wow, I can't believe you guys didn't bring up some shitty games you have fond memories of.
Phantasmagoria. There you go.
Done. Quota met.
We'd like to hear about your favorite horror game experiences, or if you have any ideas of what could help save mainstream horror games. We'd be interested in hearing about them on the comments on HorribleNight.com. And if you like this episode, give us a review on iTunes or follow us on Twitch TV, because we do these live every Tuesday night. And finally, to wrap up the shows, just a brief HorribleNight.com update. Only one this week, but we will be making the formal announcement on the site. I've been teasing it a bit the last few weeks, of our charity marathon. It's coming up November 17th. It's a Saturday. We'll be streaming all day and taking donations for Child's Play Charity once again this year. And so we'll be revealing what games we're going to play and what kind of things you can expect from the live stream, but it should be very interactive. And we're going to try to include Ethan as much as possible too, from Germany, and we'll see how that goes. But looking forward to that. That'll be it for tonight. Gentlemen, thanks for hanging out. And the Horrible Show, we'll catch you here in 2 weeks. Thanks.